Welcome back for another edition of the Half Court Press Podcast. I'm John Niatawa. He's Chris Hetty. Chris, it's been a while.
It's been so long. We have a new studio.
I got a new phone.
You did?
I got a new furnace today in my house.
All right. Mean,
there's a lot of new things.
There's a lot. A lot has happened.
Right. I don't know what anything new on your end.
No. I grew a beard.
Beard?
Yeah. I've grown a beard since the last time that we've talked, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been like almost 6 weeks.
Has it really?
There's a lot to catch up on. We got some recruiting talk that we want to get into. Mm-hmm. Expectations going into the season. This podcast, for those who are maybe are just checking in, it's about college basketball, the local teams. Chris covers Nebraska. I cover Creighton. And so we're just going to be talking about the newsworthy items over the course of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it last year. We had a blast. So we're going to do it again this year. It's kind of our first podcast of the season.
Yeah.
Quote unquote. Because even though the regular season still is a month away,
should we dub this like the preseason podcast?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
Preseason podcast, Half Court Press edition. I like it. Let's start with Creighton, because today we're recording this on a Thursday. Today, it was announced, the Big East announced its preseason predictions as told by the coaches. Now, in the Big Ten, mm-hmm. the media votes.
Yeah.
We don't hear from the coaches. But in the Big East, it's the coaches that mm-hmm. kind of set some expectations.
Which makes the Creighton pick even interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So Creighton is seventh in the Big East preseason poll. Seton Hall's won. It's the first time in 6 years that Villanova is not one.
Mm-hmm.
Seton Hall just narrowly edged Villanova by a point in the poll. So Seton Hall had like 77 votes or 77 points, and Villanova was at 76.
Oh, really?
So it was really close.
Wow.
Seton Hall got the favorite. They got the Big East player, the preseason player of the year, Miles Powell, back. A lot of experience. People think that they're going to take a big jump and win the league, I guess.
They were what, like a 8 seed last year? 8
10
or 9?
10 seed, I think. Yeah, 10 seed. Like 60.
Nebraska beat them last year.
60th in KenPom.
Wow.
It's a reach, I think, a little bit. I'm a big Miles Powell guy. I'm a big Miles Powell guy. Last year, I was voting for the AP All-American teams. I had him a second-team All-American.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was the best player in the league, made some big-time shots. He will carry that team, no doubt. But to take that type of jump, I'm not sure.
It's like a Kemba Walker UConn pick. It's basically like we're just going to
betting on the star.
Yeah, you're betting on the Big East star that's going to like just carry you.
Maybe that is where the hesitancy lies with Creighton, because while Tyshawn Alexander is a first team All Big East player, he doesn't necessarily possess that same kind of star power that Miles Powell or Marcus Howard would at Marquette, because he's a junior,
mm-hmm.
and you know, last year there were some ups and downs for him as a sophomore for the first time carrying the load. Stepping into that go-to role as the man for the Jays, and there were some good moments, and then some not so good moments for mm-hmm. him as he adjusted to that role. But to me, I was a little bit. I mean, I would say I was a little surprised, but then again, it does seem like year after year the coaches underestimate Creighton a little bit.
Sure,
the Jays, since they've joined the Big East, have either matched or exceeded where the coaches have picked them in the preseason poll. Last year, they were picked ninth, mm-hmm. and they finished in a tie for third. The year before that, they were picked fifth, and they finished in a tie for third. I think the year before that, they finished third, and they were tied for third. You know, it's just like Doug McDermott senior year, they were picked third, they finished second. They always, the Jays just tend to, they're not overachieving, and I think in large part, some years, fans would argue they have underachieved.
Sure.
But they've certainly overachieved in respect to what the coaches have predicted, which is weird.
Where would you put Creighton? And why do you think they weren't where you would maybe think they were?
So I had them at 4 or 5. I'm not quite sure how it's sorted. It's the league this year got Seton Hall and Villanova at the top.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Nova ahead of Seton Hall, but they're 1-2. A little bit of a gap, and then you got 5 teams in my mind. Creighton, Xavier, Providence, Georgetown, Marquette. For the most part, those teams return a lot. Marquette maybe is a little bit of the outlier, but they have Marcus Howard. But for the most part, those teams return a lot, and you know, maybe didn't meet the end goal that they wanted to a year ago, which was make the NCAA tournament, but they have potential.
Mm-hmm.
And Xavier, Providence, Georgetown, Creighton, those were all NIT teams. On the wrong side of the bubble, they all have the, it seems like the tools, the talent, the potential to be on the right side of the bubble this year. Will they all make it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Marquette was on the right side of the bubble last year, but faded hard down the stretch and then lost two of its top scorers to transfer. But why why do coaches, or why is the perception that Creighton is at the bottom tier of that group? I don't know. My theory today, as I was kind of conversing with some fans back and forth on Twitter, is I wonder if it's easier to respond or maybe put faith in players who have sort of the athletic profile of your traditional Big East players, which are like Georgetown, Providence, Xavier. Those guys, their roster are full of guys who are athletes. They built their teams more around like physicality, and you know, when you look at their measurables, like they're going to kill it at the combine.
Yeah,
guys.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Whereas Creighton has kind of its philosophy is geared more towards skill, and let's find these players that maybe they don't jump out of the gym, but they're going to make the right pass. Mm-hmm. They're going to hit an open jump shot. They're going to play unselfishly. Like Creighton has looked for different things. In terms of how it's recruited, going about recruiting players than Georgetown,
sure,
or Providence. And yeah. So I'm thinking that coaches are just responding to, it's almost like star ratings, almost. Even though Tyshawn Alexander, Mitch Balick, Marcus Sigurowski, they were rated pretty high as recruits. But I wonder if, you know, it's just easier to say like, okay, Providence has a guy, a point guard, his name's David Duke, and he is a freak athletically. I think it's easier to just say like, well, we think he's going to meet his potential.
Yeah.
We can see what the ceiling is. There's a better chance of him reaching that as compared to, we don't know what the ceiling is for a guy like Mitch Balick. There's not a profile for him.
I think part of it is like when the teams walk off the bus. All right, I'm picking that one.
Yeah.
Just not even really, you know, not even necessarily seeing how they warm up. Even just like, okay, well, that team looks like they've got some freaks, so I'm going to go with them. And in a Big East where it's like so close.
And that's what
close.
The Big East has been, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
always been like kind of that rough and tumble league, mm-hmm. that where physicality matters and you know, the finesse teams don't necessarily fare as well. And Creighton has had an element of physicality, but it's more on the finesse side, like the pendulum is pointing that way, whereas Providence or Georgetown or Xavier the pendulum is definitely on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that coaches, that's just what they're known. They've been born into that. And Creighton's had some success in this league, and some would argue maybe not enough.
Yeah.
You know, I tracked this down. I just kind of looked at it. Because Creighton's finished third in the conference. Well, in a tie for third. It's like this had some weird like three-way, four-way ties in the last 3 years. But the last 3 years, Creighton's finished tied for third each of the last 3 years. And so I was just kind of curious, like, who does it compare to? In the scope of the league, I think it's Nova, Marquette, and Xavier are the three teams that have more wins than Creighton in the league. And then it's Creighton and Seton Hall tied with like 29 wins over the last 3 years in regular season action. So they've been a top half team,
right?
Yet for the last 2 years, coaches are predicting them to finish in the bottom half, which makes you think like, I don't know. Maybe there is a lack of I deem it as a lack of understanding of what Creighton is and what it can be. But maybe it's just a lack of respect.
I was gonna say, is it
could
like
be a lack of respect?
Is it a lack of respect for like McDermott?
It could be.
Like, do coaches not think very highly?
I know, because every time I talk to them about it and the style, the system, like, they always say good things.
Yeah.
But maybe that's coaching.
Maybe it's just one of those things where they see the system and they're like, in the Big East, you need to be able to brawl a little bit. And I think they maybe look at Creighton and say, they're not really brawlers.
Yeah.
Can they actually do that?
Right.
Like, can you get in a rock fight with, you know, Providence or whoever, mm-hmm. Butler or whatever?
Right.
And I think they see Creighton and say, probably not. But I also would counter that with like, I don't know, man, there are a few people in the Big East or even in college basketball that I wouldn't want to, you know, go to a fight with, other than Tyshawn Alexander. Like, I'd love to have him on my team.
Yeah.
Like, whoever team I'm playing for, like, I would love to kind of go to battle with him. So that's kind of the counter argument is like, okay, well, that's some perception of Creighton and not necessarily who they actually have on the roster.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I will say that internally, I think that the players and the coaches are trying to sort of develop a little bit more toughness. I think that is something that they've recognized mm-hmm. as has been a weakness, because you talk about those games that are kind of grinders. You're going to have those, especially in March. Like, you got to win in different ways. Not mm-hmm. every game is going to be up-tempo to your liking.
Mm-hmm.
Creighton wants to run and push pace. Sometimes you're going to have to slow things down and win a grinder. And so there's an element of toughness that they do have mm-hmm. to develop, and they're working on that. But it's interesting because when we talk about like the profile of the league – or of a league and a style. Like, I've always been of the mind that if you, no matter what your style is, if you do it well and your deficiencies, you're able to mask them because you're so good at what you do. It doesn't matter. You can go for 80 possessions in a game and be and win a title, or you can go 60 possessions. Like North Carolina in 2017, right? That's when they won it. Like, they were an up-tempo team.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia last year, like, took the air out of the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, Virginia was really efficient.
So was Texas Tech.
And that's what I'm saying. They were good at what they did.
Yeah.
And so some of the weaknesses that you may point out, that you couldn't exploit them because they were so good at what they do. So it was one of the things that I was thinking about with Nebraska, because they're going to push pace.
Right.
In a league that's not necessarily known for pushing pace, even though some teams have actually tried to change that profile, and you wrote about it. But I think that's one of the questions that faces Nebraska, and it's one of the questions that's kind of still facing Creighton. It's like, can you run in the Big East and win it?
Yeah.
Can you run in the Big Ten and win it?
Yeah. Well, and it's
you can have a decent amount of success. Creighton's proven that, but can you get to that point where you're actually
so good that it's not? Yeah, and it's interesting, because I think we're at an interesting point in college basketball right now, because I think there's some perception of, like, everybody wants to go fast, everyone wants to shoot a million threes, that's how you're going to win. And I thought about this a lot last year. I think we even talked about this a lot last year, where the counter argument to that was Virginia, Texas Tech, Auburn and Michigan State. But Auburn went fast.
Yeah, Auburn.
But and Michigan State went pretty fast.
Yeah.
Texas Tech and Virginia, boy, bless those beat writers for all the 50 to 55 games that they had so boring. But it's interesting, because I think, so I asked that to some Big Ten coaches last year, and they looked at me like they wanted to smack me. Or excuse me, last week, because I asked some coaches, like, hey, you know,
At Big Ten Media Day,
I was like, hey, you know, Fred Hoiberg has a quick system. He wants to go fast. When he was at Iowa State, they were in the top 30 in terms of adjusted offensive tempo and, like, shots per possession. Length of possession.
Right.
They went super fast. So the question was, can that work in a historically slow Big Ten? And they all kind of paused and looked at me like, I can't believe I'm going to have to answer this stupid question again. And they basically said, we don't go slow anymore. Teams in the Big Ten don't go slow, other than maybe two a year. One of those being Rutgers. One of those used to be Penn State. Now it's kind of Northwestern.
Well, Wisconsin's slow, right?
Wisconsin is super slow, too. And so it was interesting, because I asked Tom Izzo that in particular, and he was like, you know,
Michigan can be slow.
He was like, Michigan State was like, you know, people get on us because we, you know, our numbers say we go slow, but it's because you go to Rutgers and they walk the ball up, or you go to, you know, Madison and they walk the ball up, and you're like, ugh. But so I was like, okay, all these coaches were saying we go fast, like, it's quicker now. So I went into the numbers. I had a wonderful, wonderful moment of realizing, and I get to hang out with Ken Pom, you know, two or three times a week and just go through numbers, which is great. And what it showed me is, you know, the Big 12 in the early 2010s, I think you could generally say they were a fast conference. So, you know, Bill Self would like to go fast. You know, Bob Huggins liked to go fast. Even, you know, in the early 2010s and the late 2000s, like Missouri with Mike Anderson liked to go really fast. Fred Hoiberg. So there was just a lot of coaches who loved to really push the pace. And so I looked at Fred Hoiberg's final year in the Big 12, which was 2014-15. And if you averaged out the whole league, they were about 65th in terms of pace of play. They would be the 65th fastest team in college basketball if you average it out to one team. And the Big 10 last year was 64th. So essentially, it's the same type of deal. Like, teams are speeding up. Teams do like to go fast more often in this Big 10. And so that makes me wonder if, you know, this is a, if you can kind of think of it as an incubator of, like, okay, Fred really perfected his system in a fast conference. Can he copy paste that into a similar speed of a Big Ten? You know what I mean? Does that make any sense? So I when I asked Fran McCaffrey about it, because he came in and in the early 2010s, he did it. He was like, we're just going to go fast.
There was a stretch there. It was like 5 years ago where Fran and Tom Crean in Indiana were the mm-hmm. only two schools that were really pushing.
I asked Michigan State
would attack in transition, but not like they not, weren't always yeah. pushing tempo.
They weren't like, we're getting the board, we're going immediately, right. no matter
but
what.
Iowa and Indiana, and they would like take the first shot available.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, right. I don't know about this.
Right. And it didn't go super well at the beginning, and then it started to actually kind of help. And so as the conference sped up, their systems worked.
Yeah.
So it's going to be hard like this year with Nebraska, because I think even if they go fast, that doesn't mean they're going to be efficient. That doesn't necessarily mean they don't really have the pieces. Yeah,
I always feel like I have to make this point when people are critical of the style that you choose to play, because you're always going to have weaknesses. Like there's no, unless you're going to fill your teams with first or lottery picks. Like,
yeah.
Okay, then it's harder to find weaknesses. But let's be realistic about the programs that we cover. That's not happening.
Right.
So. If you play up and down tempo, like you're going to have more, you're going to favor speed and you're going to want to have guys that can shoot. Ideally you'll take care of the ball, but that means that you may not rebound well. You may not have a ton of size inside. Like if you do get stuck in a game that's kind of close and the pace is slowed down, maybe you feel a little bit uncomfortable there, mm-hmm.
But you kind of have to decide. You have to decide who you're going to be. Like you, I think.
And then just like nail
exactly. Yeah. And I think with both Nebraska and Creighton now, and Greg and Fred come from somewhat similar systems, but I think in general, and I really don't mean this as a slight to either program, I think the way to success for Nebraska and Creighton is to play like you're a mid-major team, and to play like you're a Davidson playing Kansas or North Carolina in the Big Ten or in the NCAA tournament, where you're going to be smaller most of the time than your prospective Big East or Big Ten foes. Most of the time, you are going to have all these disadvantages recruiting wise, you just a lot of things in the conference that are going against you. But if you can recruit shooters and speed, boy, that's hard to stop. That's why we see so many upsets, I think, when you have a team like Vermont or Richmond or just all these smaller schools that when they get to the NCAA tournament, they can take down these giant teams that when you are filling out your bracket, you're like, wow, they're 30-5. Oh, wow, they shoot all these three. Like, that's, in my opinion, the way that Fred Hoiberg, Greg McDermott, that they find success in these conferences where I think they have so many other disadvantages. Do you think do you agree with that at all?
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assessment. The thing about it is it's not that, I mean, it's kind of becoming almost commonplace now though.
Like, yeah.
More and more teams want to play fast and more and more teams want to shoot threes.
Mm-hmm. So you have to be even better. Have to be like elite at what you do.
So like when Creighton, last year, no, Creighton did not push tempo, but 2 years ago, it was second in the country in terms of average length of possession.
Was it really?
Among high major teams.
Oh, okay.
I took out like the mid majors who don't play anybody, mm-hmm. So when I just looked at high major teams, average length of possession, Creighton was second 2 years ago. 3 years ago, it was second. UCLA ran faster than they did, and Oklahoma ran faster than Creighton did two years ago. That was it. And so that's at the elite. That's where if you mm-hmm. want to run this offense, like Creighton and Nebraska, like they got to be at that top five in terms of high major teams mm-hmm. that push pace. Otherwise, you're not maximizing what you're good at.
Right.
Like if that's what you want to be good at, you better be the best at it one of the best.
And I think what we're seeing too is, and I don't, last year's Nebraska team is a really good example where all of a sudden Tim Miles decided we're going to be a 3-point shooting team. We're going to shoot a lot of threes. This is what we're going to do. And you looked at the roster and you were like, yeah, but is that such a great idea? Like, do you really have, it's kind of like just walking in the gym being like, hey guys, like we're going to just, I know we're all 6'7", but we're just going to pound it inside and we're going to put two guys on the blocks and just feed them. And it's like, well, but this isn't quite. So I think what we're seeing in a lot of ways is a lot of teams, a lot of coaches are deciding, we need to go fast. We're just going to go fast. We're going to figure it out along the way. And I think the thing that Fred Hoiberg and Greg McDermott have separated themselves is they actually kind of know what they're doing in terms of that specific offense, you know? And so I think with Creighton and Nebraska, Nebraska in the future, but Creighton this year, like, can you go fast? Can you be efficient? Can you neutralize size of other opponents? Can you, if potentially you're in a rock fight with Providence, you know,
can you hit
four quick threes in 2 minutes and just like give yourself a break? You know what I mean?
Yeah, they did it in one game last year against Providence when they shot some unreal, like
eight of nine
in the second half from three. Okay, I wanted to ask you this since I'm kind of talking about Big Ten Media Day. From afar, just kind of watching the last few months unfold for Nebraska basketball, there's been a lot of excitement. And for a good reason, because Nebraska just hired the most, most renowned, like the top guy on the list of available candidates in terms of coaches available last offseason. Number one, Fred Hoiberg. If you had to make a short list, you probably have, most schools would have him number one. So they hired this guy and, went to Italy, killed it. The scores were, there was one game that was like, did fine or did great, and brought in a bunch of new players. There's hype around that because it's new, and then had the Friday practice, got Rick Ross in the building. I saw the intros, people coming out with their walk-in music, and everybody looks good. Like their muscles are flexing and showing. And then they're picked 13th in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So it's like build up. Reality.
Yeah.
Was that a fair sort of prediction? I mean, it's a prediction.
Yeah.
Like, nobody knows what this team's going to be because it's all new. But is that fair? And do you think that there needs to be a little bit of an adjustment in terms of expectations for this year's team?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the hype was more directed toward this is what it could become in 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. But some of that might have like bled into the expectations for this year.
Yeah.
And thinking like, well, Fred's got this team going to the NCAA tournament right away. And it's like, Big Ten coach or the Big Ten, at least the media folks don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I had him 12th. And so it wasn't super surprising to me that it was 13th. Actually, the most surprising, the Athletic and the Columbus Dispatch did an unofficial media poll, and I got to see all the ballots because I was one of the voters. And the most surprising thing was actually one voter had Nebraska as high as 6th.
Ooh.
It was like everyone had them like 12th to 14th, and then there was one 6th, and it was like, you know, James Palmer isn't on this team, right? this isn't.
That's the Fred Hoiberg factor, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I think it fits, and I think there's an interesting balance right now because there's all this excitement. They really like a lot of the pieces they have. They love Cam Mack. Ivan Wydrago's a giant. Hanif Cheatham's your leadership guy. You've got Deshaun Burke. You got Gervais Green. You've got some scorers, some nice guards. You've got all these pieces that on paper you're like, you know what, like this isn't a bad roster, like this is pretty good. But we have, every time that the media has been able to talk to Fred in a press conference or whenever, he has been very bullish and very pragmatic and very honest of just like, we're not there yet.
I've been surprised by that, by the way,
to the point where they had a practice. The first time we talked to him this quote unquote season, when they opened up practice, they had practice, and then we talked to him on that Monday. He went before Scott Frost or after Scott Frost, and they had a bad practice that morning.
Yeah, I remember him saying like we didn't practice well. It wasn't the first practice, but it was like the last of the workouts.
Yeah, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, we didn't have." So the thing is like he's really honest. We're like,
if you're a coach, I've heard him say like good things. You know, like,
yeah.
I take that back. He's talked positively about individual players, but when you ask him about the progress of the team, it's always like, nah.
Right, and which is so refreshing
because
I currently cover a football team that loves to tell me how good that they are and how much they've improved, and then they have to come back against Illinois, and they, just things on the like the football coaches love to tell you how great things are going.
But how
with Frost, or excuse me, with Fred, like he he has a vision, he knows what's going on, but he almost talks to you like he's a tortured scientist trying to invent something, where he's like, yeah, you know, like I see it, but like it's not quite there. Like I asked him at Big Tim Media Day, almost like this exact thing we were talking about. I was like, you know, there's been a lot of popping circumstance around your hiring and all these players. You know, Fred is a guy who like doesn't love attention, which I think maybe surprises some people, but like doesn't love Big Ten Media Day, doesn't love being in the spotlight. And so I was like, you know, are you just ready for the season to start? And he was like, no, because we're not ready. He's like, we need 3 weeks of like hard work because we're just not there yet. So from talking to him, you talk to him and then you see 13th and you're like, well, yeah. But I think it's this weird balance you have to kind of play with, because, you know, last year was so exciting. There was so much put on it. It was like now or never. Tim Miles, like they've got all this talent, the best talent they've had in like a decade. It was all this excitement. And then there's failure. And now this year, it's the opposite, where it's like there's some excitement, some hesitation. How do you stay engaged? How do you figure out how to like be excited even though they might only go 500? How do you convince yourself that they can maybe do better than that? Like, it's just there's not as much riding on this season. So I think that's the hard part of trying to figure out, okay, do you be excited because you've got Fred Hoiberg and you've got this really young team, they're going to figure it out? Or are you worried because you see that 13th and you know Nebraska's been there so many times before? Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just trying to digest it all, it's tough.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to, like, it's kind of what we're saying, you're trying to balance the potential of the program and the hype. I mean, on one hand, you hear Fred Hoiberg say, you know, Cam Mack, I mean, I've never coached a guy like this before.
Right.
And then on the other hand, it's like, but our team is garbage. Right?
Yeah. It's like, and I think some of it is just kind of because there are some coaches who like they never like their team really before the season.
And maybe that's it. Maybe we'll find out that like
they're actually pretty good
year after year after year. That's kind of Fred's style. It's like downplay. That's what Jay Wright does at Villanova. Like he's at Media Day today talking about like, well, I don't know how good we're going to be.
Yeah.
Like, all this stuff. And like, dude's got the most talent in the league.
Right.
And yeah, he's got an experience. But like he said it last year. It's like, I don't know. Like
Lee Barfnett,
a couple guys that might be good. And we lost 4 NBA guys and they win the league.
Yeah. So. Lee Barfnett, he's always tell the story about he knew that Nebraska football was going to be pretty good because in the preseason, Tom Osborne always be like, you know, I think we'll be all right. I think we'll be pretty good. And Lee was like, all right, well, they're going to win the national title. Like, that was how you knew, because Tom was always so, you know, downplaying. Yeah. And so, I don't know. It's going to be really fascinating, and I don't know. I think in general, like, the thing I've been saying since day one, expectations are, like, just go 500. Like, 500 is what they did first year at Iowa State. When Fred was there, they have a really, really easy, like hilariously easy non-conference.
It's very bad.
And very bad. It's hysterical.
It's classic first year.
It's totally, which, but the thing is like, it's one of those things where it's like, that's what you need. Like, you kind of need a 30-point win over Texas A&M Corpus Christi on December 29th. Like, you kind of need those things.
Their NIT number might be pretty good by the end of non-conference because you get all these blocks.
Dude, that's going to be the one thing is I'm not going to need to go look at quad one, two.
Like NC State, weren't they like top 40 in the NET and they played like
nobody
in non-con?
But I'm not going to need to check the NET rating for Nebraska every week. I mean, it's going to be Nebraska fans, you can unfollow Joe Lunardi on Twitter because like this isn't going to be one of those years.
Yeah. It is a schedule. I think I've said this before. It's like Nebraska, they put together a schedule that's not like, you know, you're not aiming for the NCAA tournament with that kind of schedule.
Yeah. No.
You know, that's a strictly sort of, let's work on us.
Yeah.
Let's try to build some momentum into conference play, set the foundation for what we want to
try and steal one on the conference. Like this year, he even said straight up, he was like, you know, this year's about getting in the system, getting Cam Mack a year in college basketball, getting Ivan acquainted to, you know, American basketball. And then he said he sees some similarities with right now in his first year at Iowa State. His first year at Iowa State, they had 4 transfers who sat, and one of those was Royce White. And he, every day in practice, he would think to himself, like, we're gonna be really good next year. Like those 4 guys were really, they were bonding, they were creating kind of a culture, they kind of understood what was going on. And I think Fred Hoiberg sees Derek Walker and Delano Banton pretty similarly. And I think he sees those two guys and says, you know, in a year from now, we're going to really be something special. If this first year we can, I mean, if you can develop Cam Mack a year, get Ivan Wade-Drago a year in American basketball, then you're talking about a roster that's, you know, a little bit older. You know, Cam Mack would be a junior, JaVae Green would be a senior. You got Delano Banton, you've got Derek Walker, you've got Ivan Wade-Drago. Like, you bring in a couple freshmen. Like, you can start to see, like, all right, maybe next year they can win, you know, 18, 19 games. And so that, but in order to win 18, 19, go to NCAA tournament next year and, like, compete next year, this year you have to, you know, set the foundation. Can't lose the team, can't have fights in practice, like, can't freak out when you're, you know, down 30 and quit. Like, just kind of building a baseline of, like, here's how we're going to run a program.
And maybe pick up an upset or two.
And maybe, yeah, and maybe for whatever reason, Nebraska always beat Michigan State, like, in East Lansing. They just always seem to do that.
No, that might have been 10 miles, though. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. He had a thing for Michigan State and Wisconsin. So, yeah.
While Nebraska's building and setting a foundation, Creighton is going to, like, Creighton wants to jump out in November with a splash. Like, second week of the season, they play at Michigan.
Yeah.
Like, if you get that game, suddenly you may change the perception of what you are, certainly outside, but maybe even inside, too. Like,
I think this is a big year for Creighton. I think this is a really important year for...
We'll talk about this as the season goes on, as we build up to the season, because I kind of group this year and next year together.
Okay.
It's sort of like... Greg has, you know, kind of gone through a full recruiting cycle in the Big East, and he's built this team that, you know, sure, some guys have left early and, you know, gone pro or whatever. But so there's been some, maybe he hasn't got to build it as perfectly as he wanted to. But essentially, he's gone all in on the style, and he's assembled a team that fits what he wants. Mm-hmm. And so now what?
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do? Like, now that you've kind of, you got some guys who have experience, you know, last year there were a lot of ups and downs and some moments where, you know, they're almost there but couldn't get over the hump. They learned some lessons. They got some experience, and now they can kind of, like, let their strengths take over.
Yeah.
That's the assumption. And so I kind of group these next 2 years because it's the core group of that class that came in was Mitch Ballack, Tyshawn Alexander, Jacob Epperson, who – lost a year, so he's technically a sophomore now, but those three combined with Damian Jefferson, who transferred in, and Denzel Mahoney, who transferred in, like, those five are kind of the core, with Marcus Sigurowski as a sophomore point guard. You know, like, this, the main group of guys are going to be together this year and next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's, like, to me, I look at it as both seasons together. What are you going to accomplish?
So do you see it as, like, this year needs to be... So, like, this year needs to be what? This year needs to be, like, 3-4 seed? What do you kind of put on it?
I look at... I think the ceiling for this team is, like, a 5 or 6 seed in the NCAA tournament, just to be realistic.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
But they got to make it. They obviously got to make the NCAA tournament.
Right.
That's baseline. And then... it's more so like framing the identity. I think, like, it's kind of, it actually, now that I think about it, it's kind of similar to Nebraska, but maybe at a more advanced stage.
Yeah.
Like, this is what this core group is going to be about. What their mentality is going to be on offense. Like, are they in attack mode 24/7 when they step on the court until the final buzzer? How are they going to approach defense? Like, can they play with the energy and the aggressiveness, diving for loose balls? Being quick to help one another and being smart, fundamentally sound defensively, as they were last year or in stretches at the end of the year, you know, is that going to be who they are? And so I feel like that's part of it too. I don't want to say that this year is, whereas Nebraska is all about kind of establishing itself. It's not just – there's more than that for Creighton.
Yeah.
Creighton
actually, it's almost like
– there's stuff that, like,
you're established.
Things to accomplish this year.
It's like they're established, but it's almost like they want to earn, like, credibility. Is that fair?
I think they have to earn it to prove it to themselves because last year they beat Marquette at the end of the year. That was a big win for their confidence. But there were so many games when they – I mean, I think they were 1-7 against the NCAA tournament teams in conference. Mm. So if the four teams that made the NCAA tournament last year from the Big East, they went 1-7 against those teams. And so it's like, I think there's still an element where they have to prove to themselves that they are able to get the job done and finish against some of the better teams in the schedule. So that's where I see it.
Yeah.
Let's end real quick with a little sort of recruiting. We mentioned briefly the Friday night event. What did they call it? Opening night?
Opening night.
Is that what we call it? And then that
you didn't go. You didn't want to come listen to Rick Ross.
I did not go.
Boy, it was an event, man. His mic was bad, and then all the team went up there, and everyone left.
Oh, really? I heard there was like a long break.
There was a 45-minute wait. Yeah.
At least you didn't have acrobatic dancers on poles. That's probably good.
Hey, what do you mean acrobat? I need a definition there.
The AD said acrobatic dancers.
Boy, that's funny.
They brought in recruits for that event, and then it kind of dovetailed into the Ohio State game.
Yeah.
Like that whole game day.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of used that. The basketball team used that. I guess, what is Nebraska still in the market for a 2020 guy? Will it be in the market for a transfer when the next window opens up?
Yeah.
Is it all about 2021? What do you see it?
I think they're putting, 2020, they've got two guys, and they like them, even though they've not seen Donovan Williams play yet because he's been hurt. But they really like Dre Davis from Indianapolis.
I like Dre Davis too.
He's kind of a steal. I think you did last time. Yeah, he's a steal.
Like he played. Creighton got a guy from Indianapolis, Jalen Wyndham.
Yeah,
and they kind of went toe to toe a little bit.
Yeah.
In the state tournament, and so I watched a lot of him.
Yeah.
As I was watching Jalen Wyndham play, and I was like,
he's nice.
I don't know if he's a shooter, Dre Davis.
No, but they can figure him out. Okay. Like Fred will teach him. So it's interesting because they're technically full, but they're kind of dipping their toe in 2020 and kind of testing the waters and kind of seeing if there's anybody else out there that they want to bring in. I think that there's a potential that Nebraska could have an open spot. Someone transfers or if they're, you just never really know. Yeah. So you kind of always have to maybe over recruit certain classes. 2021, they're kind of going all out. I mean, they want 2021 to be a defining class. And, there was some legitimate rumors that they were trying to get Jonathan Kumonga, who's the number one recruit in the 2021 class in Lincoln on opening night. And there was, for a while, it looked really promising, which he would have been the highest rated recruit to visit since Jahlil Okafor actually visited Nebraska.
I remember that.
In 2012. And so that would have been really important and really big, but that ended up falling through. They did get Kendall Brown, who was a five-star, but he was an unofficial visit, and that's kind of, they're trying to build a relationship with Sunset Christian down in Wichita.
Yeah, because he's at the academy in Wichita. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and so
I think he's probably a Kansas guy. That's
he no, he looks like a yeah. I mean he. I would be floored if he.
Creighton has him on his list too. But.
Yeah, I would be floored if he ended up at Nebraska or Creighton. Hardly ever does Kansas miss on kids that are like in state. I mean, they even ended up taking Connor Frankamp, who was kind of a, I don't even know if he was a five star, but he was like a local legend when I was in high school. He was getting recruited. He would have played at a lot of different places. I mean, played, 4 years, would have, been a dude at a lot of different places, and ended up just going to Kansas and just being another guy.
Yeah. Well,
he ended up getting in trouble and going to Wichita State.
Okay.
I think, again, 2021 is kind of the big one. Obviously, Hunter Salas is kind of really high on their list. I don't know. I think transfers are kind of their thing, and so it's one of those things where you don't really know who's going to be in the transfer portal for 2021 yet.
Until it happens. Yeah.
Exactly, until it actually happens. And so that's where they kind of have their bread and butter.
The way Creighton always does it, and it's different. Fred Hoiberg kind of goes a little bit more. He's more aggressive in the transfer market. Creighton always reserves like one or two scholarships for it. So right now, Creighton has two open scholarships for 2020. My assumption is that one of those will for sure be used on a transfer,
mm-hmm.
and another one will too. Maybe it's a grad transfer, or maybe they have a high school guy. Like they had a kid on campus, Kerwin Walton, who's a 2020 kid from Minnesota, who they've recruited for a long time.
Yeah,
but he blew up. Like he had a game where he hit like 10 or 11 threes.
Oh, really?
AAU game. Yeah, for the Adidas Championships, and so. Everyone's after him now. Like
sure.
Kansas, Arizona, he's going to take an official visit to UNC.
Oh, really?
He visited Iowa State, like all the local schools were in on him, but right. Now it's like, I don't know, everybody's after him.
Well, and it's one of those things too where it's interesting. Nebraska's recruiting a lot. So Matt Abdelmassey, who's, you know, the main recruiter, has a ton of connections literally all over the world. So it's not totally surprising that he's gotten someone like Ivan Wade-Drago to come, who was from France, or that they're offering a lot of recruits who might be in the States now, but are, you know, they're from Africa, or they're from Europe, or they're from, you know, they're originally from somewhere not in the United States. Yeah. And so they are offering a lot of kids 2021, 2022 that kind of have that background. The thing that's interesting is it's kind of hard to follow Nebraska recruiting in some ways, because they thrive and love on, like, because we talked to Abdelmassey about this, of, you know, when you're recruiting people in the transfer portal, you have a week to build a relationship, sign them, get them on campus. And that's where they thrive, because they basically say, look at all these dudes we put in the NBA, for they were transfers, this is what we do, blah, blah, blah. Boom, you get it. You get them on campus, the connection's there, whatever. And not saying that they don't build a relationship and kind of do it over time.
Is weaker.
Sure.
I feel like the Jays' strength has been building relationships with kids like Mitch Balick and Tyshawn Alexander, were guys that they recruited for a long time. They committed; those guys committed pretty early in the process because they had such a strong bond. Mm-hmm. Christian Bishop, Marcus Zagorowski, even the kid they just got, Ryan Kalkbrenner. I mean, it was a shorter window to build that trust, but the Jays were on him as early as everybody else was, and mm-hmm. I feel like they did a really good job of building a relationship. Like, building a relationship, I think, is really important for Creighton, because it sells its culture,
sure,
and it sells its development, and it's like, you're gonna be here.
That's the thing, though. Nebraska can't recruit that yet. They can't say, hey, you're gonna come in as a freshman, this is what you're gonna be at a senior. It's like, hey, we're a depot for you to blow up and go to the NBA. Yeah. Like, that's what we're gonna do.
And that's
do.
Why I think they're gonna have success recruiting transfers, because
yeah, I think so too. I mean, hell, Tim Miles had success recruiting transfers, and he didn't have the reputation recruiting transfers that these guys do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You got Taran Pettaway and Andrew White and James Palmer and Isaac Copeland. Right. And those were four guys that, like, they were really, really productive when they were here.
2021 is going to be interesting because, well, from the sounds of it, Nebraska is going to, like, it's targeting that class.
That they think they want that, because they're going to have a lot of room too.
Right, and so is Creighton.
Right.
And they run similar systems.
They're recruiting a lot of the same kids.
Yeah, they're recruiting a lot of the same players. Hunter Salas is kind of like the poster boy of that. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, he's like sitting in the middle of it, and mm-hmm. but there's a lot of kids in the middle of it, of the two programs that we cover. And it's just, I think it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this. We need to get Mike in here to talk about all these local kids too.
Yeah.
Because so Creighton just missed on a couple of local kids, but...
Right. Well,
but I guess theoretically Nebraska did too, because they had some offers for some.
Yeah, because Max Morrell, mm-hmm. 2020 kid from Miller North, had a Creighton offer and a Nebraska offer, I believe. Yeah. I mean,
but that was always, I mean, the kid took an unofficial visit to like Columbia. And when you see that, you're like, oh, he's super smart and he's going to go to where
Stanford. A choice that obviously fits within
completely.
What he wants. Yeah. But Creighton wanted him.
Yeah.
And Creighton has a good academic institution too.
Sure.
It lost to Stanford for Max. And Chucky Hepburn, 2021 guy, point guard, who I think also made a good decision for him. Like,
yes,
Wisconsin sold him on Jordan Taylor. You could be this guy. This is the model of who we think you can become. And I'm like, that fits Chucky perfectly.
Oh, dude, I told Sauter once he got that Wisconsin offer. I was like, that kid was made to go to Wisconsin. Like, he just looks and like the plays like a Wisconsin point guard.
I was thinking Wisconsin, maybe K-State. You could work well there.
Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, so he's going to Wisconsin, and Creighton wanted him too. And Creighton mm-hmm. recruited him. And thought that he could be a good fit. I mean, his personality, I think, would be... It's interesting just watching Creighton's guys practice. A guy like Sharif Mitchell, you know, he's a local kid who's always wanted to play at Creighton, and he comes into the gym, and, like, the attitude that he... And it's maybe just because of the way he's wired, and it partly kind of is, but, like, there's just something about the local players that the passion, the desire that they play for... or play with, you know, you notice something different about it. Like, I noticed something different about Kyrie. Maybe there's just this pride about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm playing in my hometown. Like, I don't want to let people down. Like, I want to have success for myself, obviously, as an individual, but I want this team to do well too. I want to be sort of the engine that kind of stirs it. And so I think Chucky would have fit in well that in that manner. But
and that's what in some ways Hunter Salas is, I think, of all the recruits in Omaha, has the highest ceiling. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's what the recruiting analysts
right,
say.
Yeah. And so the interesting thing with Hunter is I think he fits well at Creighton. I think he fits well at Nebraska. He's an Omaha kid, but he also has ties to not just Omaha. So he has that idea of like, he's been around Creighton basketball a lot more. He's been around Nebraska. And so Creighton can recruit hometown, this and that, and Nebraska kind of can't. But, you know, Nebraska can recruit, you know, NBA, and I don't know. It's just his recruitment's really interesting to me because he's has a really high ceiling, and he has to, and he's getting recruited by like UConn.
I was gonna say
Iowa State. He could just totally do both of them. You know,
you talked about fit with Hunter. It's like I think he can fit pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The potential is endless. All right, this was the first podcast of the season technically.
I feel like we could have gone for another hour too.
No doubt.
Yeah,
there's so much to get to, but that's good because next time we meet mm-hmm. and sit down and chat, we'll have plenty to talk about, even though there aren't any games.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The preseason camp.
There's plenty. Yeah, I was thinking. Yeah, there's plenty of time. Like, there's plenty to talk about from now until. So, is Creighton doing a secret scrimmage?
Yeah, they got a Missouri.
When is that?
End of October.
Okay. 26. That's what. So Nebraska's doing Wichita State.
Okay.
I wonder if like Greg Marshall's wife will be there, and like so there will be a crowd, and like they'll have to deal with.
Rules allow for it, but.
Maybe not.
That she could be pretty intimidating, I think.
We'll talk about making
some predictions. I think some predictions, team specific, league specific, maybe national too. We got plenty more to get to, and then we'll break down a little bit more about just what we see with the roster, what roles are going to be filled by who, who's starting, who's coming off the bench, what the rotation might look like. I mean, there's so much time between now and the start of the season. We have plenty more to get to. So if you haven't subscribed yet, do it.
Yeah. Tell people about it.
Tell your friends.
Yeah.
And pick up a copy of the paper and check out our work because obviously we're going to be writing a ton about basketball between now and then.
I think it's 6 weeks until Nebraska Creighton, isn't it?
Yeah. Who you got today?
I got Creighton today.
So do I. I just watched them do a short scrimmage. They did three controlled scrimmages at the end of a practice. I think it was Tuesday. And the last one, the first two, they were mixing and matching. So it was like, you know, two starters on one side, two sides. The last one, they put their whole like top five together, and it looked really smooth.
Yeah.
Like, Davion Mintz had a dime look-ahead pass to Christian Bishop. Davion Mintz hit Damian Jefferson for the one more pass in the corner. Mitch Ballack drained a three that Marcus Zagorowski set up. There was like, I think Mitch worked around a ball screen and set something up for a big. I mean, it was like, oh, that could be what it is. And like, it doesn't always look that smooth.
Right, but when it does,
because that was earlier, those two scrimmages before that, it was like turnover, bad shot. But like that continuity piece of it, like there is certainly something to be said about a group knowing how to play and who does what well and who's going to be where.
Yeah. And them knowing that.
Yeah.
Them knowing where everybody's going to be and them knowing what they do.
I swear, there was this one moment, and we'll end this pod after this, but like Davion Mintz was bringing the ball up the court, and he threw a pass. Like Mitch Ballack was standing in the paint, and Davion threw a bounce pass, a one bounce pass to the corner. It was a transition play.
Yeah.
So like Mitch hadn't sprinted to the corner just yet. He was underneath the basket.
Yeah.
Moving that way, but you didn't like. I didn't see it. A bounce pass is on its way. Mitch catches it, like does a turnaround three, and I'm just like the anticipation of knowing. Like he made the pass before the guy was even there, and to the spot, but he knew he was going to be there.
Yeah,
that type of thing is something that you can't really. I mean,
Nebraska will not have that for 3 years. Nebraska, meanwhile, went 7 for 33, 34, 35 from three-point
in a very soft scrimmage. Creighton's not had some great shooting days either, though, so it's something that, like...
But damn it if we don't deserve, like, a lot of threes in that game in Omaha.
Right.
If that's, like, a 50-55 game, I might even write a story out of protest. I would just be so mad.
Right. The podcast will be, like, three words. All right. We'll be back very soon. Thanks for listening.